InvestTalk is brought to you today by Health IQ. People who work out and eat healthy shouldn't have to pay as much for life insurance. That's the whole idea behind Health IQ. If you're a Health IQ customer, you could save up to 33% on your life insurance premium. How do you find out more about it? To see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/invest or mention the promo code INVEST when you talk to a Health IQ agent. This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Friday edition of Invest Talk. It is March 23rd, 2018. I do appreciate you being with me. Now, excuse me. We're committed, of course, as we do every day, to trying to make you a better investor. That's our job, to make you above average. That's how I see my job on this radio show, to try to part information that you could use to do better in your investing, to understand how this works, and try not to panic out or panic in. Of course, you know, we had a almost perfect retest of the lows after today's fall, and the market fell pretty hard today, but it's a retest of those lows. We're still in the correction phase. I mentioned when the market was starting to rally out of the initial correction that we're still in the correction phase, and I don't think we're finished, and we've got to be patient. And you know, now we're retesting the lows, which is very normal in a correction. Now, the correction is very fast. Remember, it's 10% correction happened just in a few days. So now we're at that lows again. Now, the Fed met this week, and of course, there was a 2.25% increase in the federal funds rate, which is kind of a non-starter. It didn't really matter because everybody already knew that was what's going to happen. We all suspected, meaning all the investor community. And so the prices of the stocks were already built in. So that really, really wasn't the situation that caused this correction. It was more caused by the Trump tariffs or talk of a war on trade barriers. You know, but I think that's overdone. I really do. Yeah, it's an issue, but I don't think it's going to be a war. I just don't see it. Remember, we're the big customer of the world. It's just hard for me to see it. Now, the premium newsletter goes out every Friday, so it went out to subscribers this morning in their email form. We send it out every Friday. I write it up every Friday and have finished it by early morning. And when I finish it and send it out this morning, the market was actually up. So I thought we might get a little correction from the big down day on Thursday, but that didn't happen. But, you know, each Friday I send it out, you know, and if you'd like to get a copy of it, it's a monthly newsletter. I mean, a weekly newsletter comes out every Friday. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab and you can order it. It's less than $10 a month, but $9.95 or $9.99, I don't know. So that's, if you're interested, take a look. Let's move to our question and answer period, which always really is the entire show. You ask questions, I answer them. So if you have any questions, it's time to call, and our number is 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Steve and Justin. This is Matthew Connor from Seattle. I've got a question about when is a good frequency of rebalancing my portfolio. I'm looking at doing that something on like maybe a quarterly or maybe twice a year type schedule. But I was curious about how maybe the impacts of earnings calls might have on some of the values of these different index funds that I'm invested in. If I'm looking at the SEC filing schedule right, 10-Ks and 10-Qs are due about 40 days after the period's over. So would it make sense to do my rebalancing somewhere like 50 days or so after most of the earnings calls or the filings might be submitted? So I'm letting the dust settle after any major sell-offs or buy-ups in order to level out the impact of rebalancing. Look forward to answering the podcast. Thanks.
Okay. Rebalancing your portfolio, you should do it no less than once a year. No less than once a year. And I would say a couple of times a year should be enough. And I know people who do it every quarter. I don't think you will try to catch or not try to, before or after earnings, trying to figure you're going to make more or less money from the earnings reports. That really doesn't work. That's not what rebalancing is about. Rebalancing is just trying to stay, if something really took off really high and now it makes it a too significant part of your portfolio, or some other positions fell very sharply and is it time to get out of them, or maybe I need to add to them if they're still very good fundamentally. The rebalancing is looking at the portfolio and make sure that it's not out of balance. Now, to know that, you have to understand what a balanced portfolio is. And I'm concerned that a lot of people don't know what that means. But, I can't explain it in the short period we have on the radio show. It's just not possible. But try to understand first what a balanced portfolio looks like. And, it depends on you, too, because if you want to be aggressive or non-aggressive or conservative, you balance the portfolio to that desire, whatever that goal is of yours. So that takes a little bit of knowledge and a little understanding of what you have and how to accomplish a balance. The American Association of Individual Investors, otherwise known as AAII, published a survey of its members. It just came out today, and it shows that investor pessimism rebounded to a six-week high in their latest sentiment survey. That continues to remain below average, both optimism and neutral sentiment declined this week. Bullish sentiment, expectations that stock prices will rise over the next 6 months, pulled back by 3.6% to 33%. The drop keeps optimism below its historical average of 38. Remember, it's at 33 for the fifth time in 7 weeks. So you're seeing a little bit more pessimism coming into the American Association of Individual Investors. Also, each week in their survey, they asked an extra question. This week, they asked AAII members what influence fourth quarter earnings had on their outlook for stock prices. The majority of respondents fell into one of two groups. Slightly more than 2 out of 5 respondents, 43% or so, said fourth quarter earnings had limited or no influence on them. Many of these respondents pointed to other factors such as politics, the new tax law, trade policy. Others said they simply do not focus on quarterly earnings. 39% of the respondents view fourth quarter earnings as being positive. Now, do you know if the earnings are growing or not growing? If you don't, you should. Earnings are growing quite strong in the fourth quarter. They were strong in the fourth quarter. So, this survey comes out all the time, the American Association of Individual Investors, AAII. And what's your opinion? What do you feel? Do you think the market's going to be higher the next quarter or lower the next quarter? How about by the end of the year? Quarter to quarter, to me, is very difficult to nail down. I think that's just very, very difficult. I like a year-to-year seems to be more reasonable outlook. You got politics, you got all kinds of noise that affects the market. But if you just step back and say, okay, how's the economy doing? How's the world economy doing? If the economy is doing well, there's jobs are plentiful, that is bullish for the market eventually. It usually is bullish. And you just sit back and say, well, when's the next recession coming? When's that on the horizon? That's really what you want to look for, that recession. And how far out is it? There is going to be a recession. They always come. It's a matter of when. And then you want to know how deep it's going to be. And you try to figure these things out, and it's half of it's a guessing game. Trust me, I understand this. But it's an important effort by you to understand what makes recessions happen, what kind of signals do we look for. Okay? Now, what happened today in the market? The Dow was down 424 points. Remember, it was down 700 and something yesterday. The NASDAQ down 174 and the S&P down 55. So another pretty darn weak day, which was interesting. It wasn't on a lot of volume. Why is that interesting? Well, I don't see panic yet. I don't see any panic. There's no panic. Panic, the volume would tell you if there's panic. If all of a sudden a huge amount of volume and there's a lot of selling pressure, you know people are panicking. And if we see a panic with 2 or 3 days of high volume, and volume meaning trade, stocks trading hands, selling, and a really strong fall in the market, then you know that it's going to be ending soon. And isn't that what you're really looking for? You want to see what the signal is for this panic to stop. Because then you can look around and see, look at all the damaged stocks out there and see which ones you've been waiting for to buy. And then you go buy them. Today's words of wisdom come from Charlie Munger. You know who he is? Charlie Munger is the vice chairman of Berkshire Hathaway. He works with Warren Buffett. He's been his right-hand man forever. He said, "No wise pilot, no matter how great, has talent and experience, who has talent and experience, fails to use his checklist." Do you have a stock or a fund evaluation checklist? I'm Steve Peasley. This is Invest Talk. Give me a call. Number is 888-99-CHART.
You're listening to Invest Talk. The moving average is a simple technical analysis tool that smooths out price data by creating a constantly updated average price. Got questions about it? 888-99-CHART is how to ask right now on Invest Talk.
888-992-4278. Okay, let's talk about our main talking point. Remember, we have four of them, right? I usually do four a day. I try to. And the main talking point today is yields on closed-end funds make this a complicated investment look worthy. Okay? So the yields, closed-end funds. What's the difference between a closed-end funds and open-end funds? A closed-end fund is one that has a finite number of shares. It's a mutual fund or an exchange-traded fund, but there's only a finite shares. Whereas a mutual fund and its ETF, the trade fund, usually is open-end, meaning there's if more people buy it, they issue more shares. Whereas closed-end fund only has a million shares or whatever they issued from the very beginning. Now, what does that... Okay, most closed-end funds are bond funds, just so you know. There's only about 500 of them out there. Opposed to 8,000 mutual funds, about 1,800 ETFs. So there's only like 500 closed-end funds. And they are bond funds. And because they are closed-end, the major difference is that they can sell at a discount or a premium to the value of their holdings in the fund. An open-end fund does not. It sells right at the net asset value of what their holdings are. Whatever that value is, that's what they're selling at. Closed-end fund can sell at a premium or discount because they can go up and down purely based on supply and demand and not just the value of the fund, the holdings that they have. That means you can buy these things at a discount at times, right? And the hope is they'll go back to their net asset value and you can get capital appreciation if it does. Meanwhile, you're collecting dividends. So that's the thought about closed-end funds, how you can make more money on them by buying them at a discount. Now, of course, no one knows if they're at a discount when they might go to net asset value or a premium. It may never. You don't know that. No one knows that. That's the danger. This is the Mess Talk, everybody. A savings account is a reliable place for an emergency fund, your emergency fund money. Whereas a market investment is not. The stock market is not a safe place. So how should you have How much money do you need to have in your bank account for emergencies? We talked about it many times. Give me a call, 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk continues on a service of KPP Financial. See the selection of innovative investment programs designed for maximum growth or steady income from KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. Check in now with your money question at 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Steve, this is Jason. I'm 23 and I'm trying to build a portfolio of growth stocks and value stocks, and I was listening to the podcast and you said right now value stocks is a better one to go for, but I was wondering if I should invest in value stocks or growth stocks, and what do you think about stock symbol YRD? I just invested in that one and I was trying to get some information about it. Thanks.
Yeah, I think in general, 2008 will be there'll be better results with value stocks versus growth stocks. But that doesn't mean you don't buy growth stocks. It just means that you lean on the value stocks. If you can find a growth stock that has great value, then you get the best of both worlds. Now, this YRD is Yuandai Limited. It's an ADR, a Chinese-based stock, which, of course, got crushed yesterday and went down a little bit more today. Chinese-based operator of an online consumer finance marketplace connecting borrowers and investors. They're going to make $4.35 this year. That's 30% more than last year. $5.70 next year per share. That's another 31% increase. And they're growing by 70, 80% in the last couple of quarters. I mean, the quarter before that, they were growing 100% a year ago. And it is a $2.3 billion company doing $280 million a quarter, so about $1 billion a year. Therefore, it's fairly inexpensive, really. P.E. ratio is what? It's a $38 stock, going to make $5.70, so 7, 8 P.E. The five-year range is 3 to 20. With great return on equity, 54%. The company is, on paper that I'm just seeing, is very, very good. It's a growth stock, and it's not very expensive. Now, the stock price peaked in October at around $52, and today is at $38. And it's what's happened, it has lower highs and higher lows. And since then, so that means it's a triangle coming to a point, and it's right near the 200-day moving average, trying to hold it. So this could be the place where you want to pick it up, but I would probably suggest you wait till it breaks up or breaks down before you buy it. I wouldn't buy it here because it's still falling from the last couple of days. Let's see if it breaks up, and if it breaks up above $43 or so, I would buy it. It's at 38 now, and that's what, $4, so that's like 15 to 18% from here. But I'm looking at a chart, and that's where if it gets above that, I think that it can keep going up. Being at the 200-day moving average right now, if it breaks down, you got to wait till it bottoms out. YRD is a symbol, everybody. Chinese ADRs in traded on our exchange here. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Okay, what is a correction? I bet we talk about it, and I think we all know what it is, but just in case. A correction in the stock market is a fall in stock prices, usually judged by looking at the indexes, S&P 500 being the broad one and the most well-known. And a normal correction would be about 10%. But a correction could be defined as anything from 10 to 20%. 10 to 20%. So even up to 20%, you're still in correction. Above 20%, that is usually defined as a bear market. We are in a correction. People have been saying, I've been reading that we were coming out of, we were not in the correction. We're now in a second correction. No. You are in a correction until the price goes above the old high. So even though the market fell 10%, then it rose about 7 or 8% from that to get back up there, it never exceeded the old high, so we were still in the correction. And so, therefore, we are still in the correction. Okay? The S&P it went down on February 8th with a fall of 10.2%. 10.2%. So that exceeded 10%, but just barely. And the old high for the Dow is 26,617. And today is at 23. So, we're still in our correction, everybody. We're working through it. It takes, the initial fall was extremely fast. Now we have lots of volatility within the correction mode. And that is what a correction is. We are in it. We never got out of it since the correction started, in the second week of February or so? And we're still in it. We'll still be in it until it exceeds the old highs. Okay? What if it doesn't exceed it for 6 months? Well, you're still in a correction then. Until you go below 20% down, you're not in a bear market. You're in a correction. If it goes to 21% down from the high, you're in a bear market now. See, that's the only problem you have here is these are just kind of generally accepted terms that everybody accepts, but there is no official, entity that said, okay, this is how we define it. Not really. Oop. So what's coming up on our next Invest Talk, which would be Monday? Why liquidity matters. Liquidity. What's liquidity? Why liquidity matters, everybody. That will be on the topic. That'll be one of the topics on the Monday Invest Talk. We're here to answer your questions on any money topic you want to discuss. So call me now at 888-99-CHART.
Well, it only makes sense, doesn't it? A fit person is a healthier person, and the data proves it. The Journal of the American Heart Association says an overall healthy lifestyle is associated with a 57 to 60% lower risk of cardiovascular disease and all-cause mortality. Well, now there's an insurance company that also understands the benefits of good health, Health IQ. Health IQ developed a unique mortality model and unique underwriting system. Health IQ can save their customers up to a third on life insurance, up to 33%. So if you invest in your good health by eating smart and exercising, you'll enjoy a payday. We invite you to go to healthiq.com/invest to see if you qualify. That's healthiq.com/invest. Or mention the promo code INVEST so they'll know you're an Invest Talk listener when you talk with a Health IQ agent. Now let's get back to the podcast. This is Invest Talk. So, what's your number one money worry? Do you feel you have a good grasp of your investment strategy? Do you need help formulating that? Talk to Steve right now. Our anytime number is 888-99-CHART.
How you doing, guys? My name is Jeff from Philadelphia. I called in the show a few weeks ago and we talked with Steve about AbbVie, ABBV. Obviously, bad day today for AbbVie. Biggest price drop in the history of the company, 12.5%. I saw it as an opportunity to pick up a few more stocks when it hit around 98. The lowest today was like 96. Thought it was interesting that Steve had just talked about the other day, like with Facebook, these sort of one-time incidents as opposed to real problems with the fundamentals of the company. And I was wondering to get your thoughts on this particular instance with ABBV. Thanks again, guys. Look forward to hearing on the show.
I kind of like it. I kind of like AbbVie. The fundamentals are very strong. ABBV develops Humira, other pharmaceuticals, and biological treatments for rheumatoid arthritis, psoriasis, and Crohn's disease. It's going to make $7.50 a share this year. That's up 34% from last year. Then next year, another, 16% to $8.71, and it's a $97 stock. Return on equity is 185%. That's very good. The only little negative is it's got lots of debt. But I have to check into that. But they got huge cash flow to pay for that debt. They pay a 3.9% dividend. And so that kind of worries me a little bit. Why would you? I like the company. Don't get me wrong. The fundamentals were strong. I just would look into that debt. They are going to repurchase $10 billion worth of their stock, which is about 7.5% of the outstanding, which is a really strong buyback program. And sales are growing 8, 9, 10%. The most recent quarter was up 14%. So they're accelerating. Yeah, this is the kind of stock you want to own. This was kind of, and you want to buy it when it has these kind of falls, which it did fall sharply. It fell a little bit more today, not too much, but it did. Was down today like, you know, 0.2 of a point, 64 cents, which was not bad for a day that's down 400. So I would have waited until it calmed down a few days to see where it actually is going to shake out on the low side. But it is. This is a, and it does fit their criteria. There really was no reason for it to fall other than it was expensive. PE right now is 18, but going forward, the PE is going to be about 11 or 12, and that's the low of the five-year range, 11 to 23. So, yeah, I like it. We're going to get some opportunities here for you people that have been holding off and doing what I've been asking to just don't be, you know, have some cash on the side for some ammunition. You're going to, this year is going to give you an opportunity to get that money back to work. And the correction is when you want to do it. So we'll see. I see this as market's only correcting, really. I don't see it going to be going into a new bear market because there's no fundamental reasons for it. It could, of course, and I could be all wrong. I mean, it's always possible. But there's no logical fundamental reasons for a bear market. Not yet, not at this point. I mean, that could change, but, you know, the leading economic indicators say it's not going to change. I mean, every indicator out there is still is telling us the economy is going to do well this year. And there's been no signs yet. So, buying opportunity and corrections. That's what you got. That's how you have to think about it. Okay? 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. What are the important, what do we import? What do we import from China that is causing all those problems with our trade balance? I mean, we all know that we're importing more than we're exporting, right? Well, I got some numbers for you. The main problem is in the computer electronics and electronic equipment. In those two categories, we're talking $200 billion. Of us buying those products from China. Okay, so that's a drain on us because we don't buy those products here. We don't even make computers here, really. Now, after that, now that's $200 billion right there. After that is stuff like miscellaneous manufacturing, $39 billion, apparel, $29 billion. Machinery, $26 billion. Furniture, $23 billion. So, but what do we supply to them that gives us a surplus? What's the trade that we give them? The main thing is farm crops, and that's $15 billion. Think about those numbers. I mean, it's $200 billion for computer electronics and electronic equipment. It's 15, it's that for them, you know, with our negative surplus, and we our biggest thing we supply is crops at 15, then transportation at 10, then oil and gas at 7 billion, and then waste scrap at 5 billion, and then it drops down to a billion or less. And we're carrying a $375 billion deficit with China. $375 billion. So when Trump announced, what was it, $60 billion? In future tariffs, it's not going to fix this problem. It's not. So that's only a little tiny step in the right direction to fix this problem. This is more fundamental. We have to do something more fundamental. And What I think will help, remember we talked about, I mentioned that they had a lot of inflation yesterday coming out of China, 2.5% versus us, and we might be importing inflation. If they can have more higher prices for salaries and then to have higher prices for goods and get into this, you know, get into a cycle of inflation, not runaway inflation, I'm not suggesting that, just an inflation where salaries keep going up and value of products keep going up, then the trade deficit will start to swing the other way. Why do I say that? Because things are going to cost more money that they import to us. And maybe we could start making them or buy them, buy our own stuff here. But first of all, we got to make some, I mean, it's computer electronics and electronic equipment is $200 billion of it all by itself. I mean, that's a huge, huge sectors right there that I don't know how we're going to be able to fix that anytime soon. It's just not going to be possible. Now, I invite you to take a look at our InvestTalk blog this month where we covered important topics like jobs and wages, inflation, interest rates, worker productivity, and, you know, and a survey that shows that Americans fail financial literacy tests. They've been doing that for some time. So what can we do about that? Maybe we've got to make people smarter. And there's a place for your comments, too, if you want to make some comments. It's ready for you to post at investtalk.com. Look for the InvestTalk tab, and then Income Marketplace and Blog Archive. We have an open line ready for your comments. Call right now.
How would you like to invest in the same program as your financial advisor? You can. When you choose any one of the investment programs at KPP Financial, the principals at KPP invest their own money right along with their clients. It's called parallel investing. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success.
Hey guys, Brad from Rochester again. I'm just kind of playing around with lots of stocks, and I had a question. I'm very new to the market, and I don't exactly know what I'm going to be doing with this particular stock, especially since its recent activity. The stock is CGG. It is doing very bad, and I don't know what's happening with it. I've been trying to follow the news, but the news isn't really giving me too much about what the company's doing or how they're changing. I know they recently filed for bankruptcy, I believe. I'm just wondering what to do. I don't have that much shares into it, and it's not going to be a huge loss to me to get rid of it all. It's just I keep on hoping that it's going to turn around. Anything you can say would help. Thank you.
Okay, Converge Corporation, Converges Corporation, CVG. It is a company that provides outsourced customer care, billing services, the interactive software, probably those, the computers that answer the phone, which everybody hates. Their earnings went down 10%. It's going to go down 10% this year to $1.68 and then rebound 3% to $1.73. Sales have been shrinking. Okay, let me back up a little bit. You started off by saying I'm new to investing and I bought this stock. Okay, and I'm not trying to pick on you, but there's where you made your mistake. If you're new to investing, you shouldn't be picking stocks because it's not easy. People think it is, but it's not. If you're new to investing, you stay in index funds or ETFs that track indexes or mutual funds. Do not try to pick individual stocks until you are well-versed on how it works. How do you know anything about the fundamentals? Do you know anything about the technicals? What does the company do? How much money does it make? What's its profit margin? What's the return on equity, return on assets? All those fundamental numbers. Have you looked at the balance sheet? Do you even know what you're looking at when you look at it? See, so you can't just say, well, I want to get into this stock because I like it. Well, you can do that, but you're not going to make money. Okay, you get lucky. And that's probably the worst thing that can happen to you. This company is going to make, its earnings are going down and sales are going down. The stock should not go up because of that. just because of that alone. It shouldn't go up. Earnings have to go up and sales have to go up. Now, it has decent earnings of $1.73. You should ask yourself, well, why did I buy this stock? Why did you buy the stock? What was your thinking? Because someone else said it was good, or you read somewhere that it said it was good? You don't. That's not how you pick stocks. Because it did good last year? That's not how you pick stocks. So you got to start from a base, okay? And it's great. You want to learn how to do this. I have no problem with that. I think that's great, and it's smart. Even if you hire somebody, you still need to know what they're doing. So no matter where you are on this learning path, you have to start gathering knowledge. Now, this company is not doing that well, so the stock will not do that well. Okay, does it have something coming up that will make it do better? Well, I can't tell from just this quick look. But I don't see, for instance, insiders buying. I don't see mutual funds adding. They're not adding. They're selling off some of them. And, you know, so there's no, where's the catalyst to make this go higher? Where? CVG, everybody. So give me a call if you want to talk about it. I mean, I'd be happy to, you know, give you some guidance. But you don't buy stocks until you know how to analyze them, okay? That's the smarter way to go, is to just buy index funds. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So what's on your mind? What do you guys want to talk about? Do you have something that you think is interesting? Do you think that we are going to have a trade war, for instance? Because I don't. But I could be wrong. But there's trade war talk. Trump is talking a lot. Did you already see how many countries he said that they won't have any tariffs on the steel and aluminum? That they're not going to have any tariffs? Did you see that? I mean, almost all of the EU. So you know, all the talk about, you know, a trade war, I think is just tough talk to try to address a problem that our country has ignored for a long time. I think that's all it is. Trying to talk tough. We'll see. We'll see. But, you know, you can hate the president or love the president. I think he's a flawed individual personally. But the politics, try to set that aside and say, well, what is he trying to do? And try to look at it from a cold-hearted investment point of view. And I've read his books long, many years ago, and the guy is not a very friendly guy, but he is a great negotiator. You can't take that away from him. You can't. So is this all about negotiation on these trade war talks? I think it is. Same way with the NAFTA thing. I think it's all negotiations, because that's his bailiwick. That's what he knows. So, don't panic. Look at the fundamentals of the economy. So that, you know, don't panic with what you see going on in the stock market. We're just seeing volatility. That's what we're seeing. We're having a normal correction. Nothing to really worry about. Let's go to Art in Menlo Park. How you doing, Art?
Good, Steve. How are you today?
Good. You want to talk about a stock that's on our watch list for to buy.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to do.
Allergan, right?
Allergan. I was just waiting to see if the price will, like, stabilize in this area.
That's what we are doing. We're doing the exact same thing. You're getting smarter, Art. You know, I've noticed the last few phone calls that you've made, the last 10 or 20, you make a lot of sense in what you're deciding. And I like this is Allergan, an Ireland-based developer of branded drugs. And it fell to a low, bounced off the low, and it's coming off a little, but it's not falling nearly as fast as the market. So it looks like in this area, $159, somewhere in this area, $150 to $160 is where we're going to be a buyer here. You know, I might wait a little bit longer. I'd like to see it maybe go above the 50-day moving average, then buy it. Thanks, Art. I appreciate the call. You get the last word. Our last segment's coming up, everybody, to wrap up the week. Check in now, 888-99-CHART. You can join in the discussion.
calls on InvestTalk for this Friday, March 23rd. As you put together an investment portfolio, don't forget to consider liquidity and in other areas of your financial life. Why liquidity matters. That's next time. You have a question for Steve right now? That's what matters to us. 888-99-CHART is how to reach him on InvestTalk.
Hey, good afternoon, Stephen, Jeff, and this is Ray calling from Brea. Justin was talking in regards to date funds the other day, and my question is, the date funds, such as the Fidelity date fund, that invests in other funds held by Fidelity, do you incur the management fees from the additional funds held in the additional Fidelity funds, as well as the date fund that you invest in? So I guess my question is, are they able to double dip their expenses out of your investments? I'll be listening on the podcast. Thanks.
The quick answer is yes. Yes. Now, what he's talking about, everybody, is the target dated funds. You know, those funds in your 401k, usually that, or 457 or 403b, that says, okay, a target date of 2035, and that's your retirement date, 2035. And so the idea is you buy the fund, and at 2035, as it approaches your retirement date, the fund gets more conservative. And he's asking that these mutual funds, target dated mutual funds, buy other funds, and that's what they do. And do you have to pay an expense ratio fee for the target dated fund and the other funds that they buy in the same fund family? Fidelity or Vanguard or what? And the answer is yes. Now, before you go off all crazy and say, that's ridiculous, which it is to me. I mean, that's one of the reasons I don't like them. But they do, the fees are reduced. They are reduced. They're much smaller, but there's still two fees. I don't like the concept. The mutual fund industry loves these target dated funds. They're one of their favorite types of fund. They thought they invented something that was great, okay, because it solves a problem for you, the investor, because you don't have to even worry about anything. You just buy this, and it'll automatically get more conservative as you get closer to the target date, your retirement date. But it totally ignores, what if the definition of conservative is they buy more and more bond funds, and the interest rate environment today is a terrible time to buy bond funds, and your target date's retirement is next year or 2 years from now. That would not be a good time to buy a target-dated fund for that period, because those bond funds will go down in value as interest rates rise. So it's really great for the mutual fund families, because you buy them and ignore them, and they get to hold on to your money and get to do what they want. They make a lot of money on your money. They love it. They don't have to do anything. You don't buy and sell stuff. You don't move around. You don't want to go to cash. You just leave it alone and let them collect their fees and let them manage it for you. They love that. And I can totally understand why they would love that. What is an RMD? And what if you don't take it? RMD is required minimum distribution. What that means, it's for us retired people. Well, I'm not retired, but the retired people, when you reach, excuse me, I'm still fighting this cold. When you reach age 70 and a half, that year you reach age 70 and a half, you are required to take money out of your IRA, your 401k, your 403b, your 457, your SEP. You are required to take a minimum distribution from there, because Uncle Sam wants its income tax on that money. Now, it's when you turn 70 and a half, you have to, and we're not talking about Roths here, just regular type accounts, not Roth IRAs or Roth 401k. When you reach 70 and a half, you have to take the money within the following year, April 1st, okay? You have to take your required minimum distribution. And what if you don't? What if you forget, or you just don't want to, or you just ignore them and you don't care? This is what happens. Whatever you don't take that you're required to take, the penalty is 50%, 50% of what you didn't take that you were supposed to take. So let's say you took $3,000 and your required minimum distribution was really $5,000. That means that of the $2,000 that you didn't take, they're going to take $1,000 for penalty. Make sure you take your required minimum distribution. Okay? Time to wrap it up. You can see more about today's talking point. Yields on closed-end funds make them worth a look right there on investtalk.com. And there's a link to a replay of today's program. You can see that there, too. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. Justin Klein, I thank you. He and I thank you both for making it. We both thank you for making this show part of your daily routine. We appreciate that. And let's do it again on Monday.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is President and Justin Klein, Chief Executive Officer of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial. And they thank you for listening and welcome your comments or questions on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.